You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Monday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network, and we'll talk about the shootings in Pensacola. Obviously terrorist related. And Saudi Arabia, back in the headlines as somebody for whatever reason, that murders Americans. And so if you watch the news, what I like to do, if you look at breaking news, is go to Twitter and just put the hashtag in for whatever stuff's being tagged as and watch all the stuff that pops up. Well, if you peruse that, this thing quickly turns political, and it's just stupid. You know, you have people that hate the president, you know, you have people that love the president, and you're looking for information. And then you have people that, hate the Saudis, link it to 9/11. You have people that are apologizing for the Saudis that link it to, that say Saudi Arabia is America's greatest and most enduring ally in the Middle East, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, into all of that, three dead young Americans who had their entire life in front of them lost their life for somebody who evidently, you know, hated the United States. So what I want to do is I'll play you the question and answer. Yesterday, the FBI held its first press conference. The initial statement, you know, is your basic boilerplate about please be patient with us. We're going to get to the truth, and then essentially say nothing, right? Say the things that people already know. So anyway. But I will play about 6 minutes of the question and answer you'll find it more frustrating than anything else, but it is news, so we'll do that. I'll give you an update in terms of the latest information this morning, and then Jeff Kenney going to join me this morning. About 8:35, so in about 30 minutes, Jeff will join me. You know, Jeff did a lot of advisor work, you know, and has worked in his life with a lot of, you know, people that come here to help, you know, to train, to help the United States in some faraway part of the world. So anyway, so we'll get Jeff's thoughts on this. So in my opinion, you know, the biggest question in my mind is, will the Saudi Arabian government move to protect the people implicated in this, right? And so his friends, from the information that you've seen, are accessories. Somebody evidently filmed it. The FBI won't comment on that. Others knew about it. The FBI won't comment on that. as you would not expect them to. So anyway, will the Saudi government move to protect them? And I don't know under what pretense they could protect them. They are not under house arrest, although they have been restricted to NAS Pensacola by their, you know, detachment commanding officer, whoever that is, some mid-rank officer, major lieutenant colonel type, serving, you know, having a cushy job of being the Saudi LNO at Pensacola, and now deals with this. So anyway, those Saudi aviators have been, or wannabe aviators, are confined to base and evidently, according to the FBI, are cooperating with authorities as this thing gets going. So a good Monday morning to you on the backside of my birthday. My daughters and I went out and had dinner, a nice dinner, on Saturday night. And so that was nice. But the so Jeff Kenney will join me at the bottom of the hour. So let me play for you the press conference that the FBI held yesterday. Now, again, I'm not going to bore you with the boilerplate of the press conference. This is the Q&A that took place towards the end of the press conference.
Can you talk about the fellow Saudi classmates of the shooter? One, our reporting shows that there was a watch party where mass shooting videos were shown. Can you confirm that that happened? And more importantly, do you believe that those students or anybody knew about this attack beforehand?
So, as you know, we're still have a lot of answers, just as you do out there. There are.
Okay, so the question is, right, is it true that they had a party before this happened? Is it true that they watched videos of mass shootings in the United States? Right. So what is the status of their friends? So, and here's the FBI response.
There are a lot of answers that I'm not prepared to answer as we continue to investigate. There are several students that are cooperating and providing information, and as we continue to vet those leads, I will provide that information as soon as I can. But I do have to have the integrity of our investigation, so I won't be answering very specifics as I go through that, and we continue to share information if I can and as soon as I can. I have numerous press officers in here to make sure that as immediately as we can get that information to you, we will be sharing it.
And there's a report that someone taking videos. Do you believe that there was anything nefarious about any videos that were taken?
Do you believe there was anything nefarious, right, that had to do with somebody filming, somebody shooting people? Or do you think the guy just said, hey, why don't you come, like, film me hanging out, walking down the hallway. Right.
Again, as much as I would love to answer any questions about the videos or any other presumption information that's out there, my goal is not to continue the misinformation campaign. I'm here to just continue to gather facts. There's a lot of review. There's a lot of follow-up information that needs to be done. So as soon as that information has been vetted and is accurate, and it can be shared, it will be.
You know, if you listen to these press conferences, they don't give any additional information. They're the most frustrating things in the world. Here you say, okay, I'll take your questions now, and then you don't answer a question. Why take the questions? Come out, make a statement, say we won't be taking questions, and then walk out. But they put themselves in this situation, and you listen to these questions that everybody's thinking about, right? And they don't answer them, and it's just frustrating as hell.
Ma'am, can you talk about how suspects are able to get a hold of weapons?
Again.
So how is a foreign national in the United States, how does that person get a weapon?
The gun weapon, that was a 45 Glock 9mm that has been confirmed.
So let me clarify that. It's a Model 45 Glock 9mm. Okay, that's what the shooter used.
Just it legally and lawfully. The ATF has the process listed on their website. There is readily available public information for you to get that and how they can purchase a weapon lawfully, and it's not just him, but any foreign national.
Ms. Rojas, you talked about controlling the misinformation. It's a very simple question that can help clear up any misinformation. Did somebody record the shooting as it happened?
Pretty straightforward. Obviously, this dude's done this dance before, okay? Obviously, blunt, basic question. Did anybody record this?
Again, there is obviously a lot of information that needs to continue to be vetted. As you know, this is a Navy base. There are several digital media. There's a lot of teams that are going on the ground. There's a lot of...
That's not the question.
...view that still needs to go on as to what happened that day.
But you said,
and as we continue to do that, we will do so.
If it's misinformation, please clear it up for us.
Yeah, see, that's why you don't do these things, okay? She could very easily say, yes, one of the fellow students recorded it.
Next question, please.
How many international students are there?
Now, what happens here is she just stood there and didn't say a word, and then the public affairs officer said, next question, please. So.
How many are Saudi?
Has that Twitter feed been confirmed to be?
Could you repeat that? I didn't hear the first one.
Can you tell us when the gun was purchased, and if that Twitter feed that we heard about from the intelligence agency, if that's been confirmed to be his?
No.
Where and when was the gun purchased?
That was the first question. No, I appreciate the question. We're not going to go into the specifics of the investigation at this time and dates on whether or not when and how it was purchased. It was purchased lawfully. I've told you that it is a 9mm weapon, Glock 45. It was purchased lawfully. And that's the information.
If I call on you, that's when you ask a question, please. Green and back.
Did the shooter live on base, or when did he move on to the base?
Those specifics will be shared as we can.
Right? It just pisses you off watching it.
Continue to move further through the investigation.
Black over there.
Is the FBI looking at Al-Shamrai's travel into and out of the United States? We've seen reports that he entered the country in 2018. And then at some point left and then re-entered in 2019 in February. Can you confirm that or tell us where he might have traveled in between?
Again, these are investigative leads. Obviously, we are going to check all travel information. We are very fortunate to have numerous agencies and partners here to help us vet all that information out. As those details become available, we will be sharing those information.
Can you confirm that the Glock 9mm, and can you tell us where it was purchased? What state?
Again, I'm not going to confirm the state, but it was Florida.
I'm not going to confirm the state, but it was Florida. Come on.
9mm. It was a Glock 45?
It's model 45.
Model 45.
Model 45 9mm.
Can you talk to a level of cooperation of these other Saudi nationals that you have detained? Are they still in your custody?
Again, like I said, they're not in our custody. But as I said, they're not in our custody. A lot of the individuals that were on base are cooperating with their Saudi official government.
So what does that mean? Listening to that, what does that mean? So you have people that supposedly either filmed this, knew about this, and they're not in our custody. They're corresponding with the Saudi government. Like, no, you commit a crime in this country, you're subject to the laws. I don't care if you're part of it. I don't know if there's any kind of status of forces agreement, but if you commit a felony or you commit a terrorist act, those don't apply to you.
And they have been instructed to follow their commander's leads. They are on base, and they continue to assist us in answering our investigative questions.
All right, gentleman right here was not asked a question.
Are you investigating this shooter's background in Saudi Arabia? Do you have agents working with the Saudi Arabian authorities on the ground there?
We are working with every single international and domestic partner to ensure that we vet every single lead as necessary.
All right, last question in the back right there.
Is it true that the Saudi government has offered to pay the victims of these families?
I'm sorry, that has not come to my attention as to what the Saudi government has paid or not paid. I have told you that the Saudi government has pledged their cooperation and their commitment, and they have done so the state in helping us with the questions and investigative leads that we need to do with the shooter and his classmates and associates.
Can you tell us more about what they're doing?
All right, thank you very much.
There you have it. There you have it. There's a whole lot about nothing, right? The type of gun, right, and who it was. The latest this morning, armed with a legally purchased 9mm Glock handgun and several extra magazines, no arrests have been made in the case. The woman you just heard speaking is Special Agent in Charge, Rachel Rojas. One of the things she did say was that it's being investigated as an act of terror, which allows the federal government to get involved and use different tools, and it falls under different, dare I say, rules of engagement. Governor of Florida called the shooter somebody with a deep-seated hatred for the United States who should have been vetted by both the American and Saudi militaries. Hours before the shooting, tweets purportedly written by the suspect railed against the United States for its support of Israel and for stationing troops at bases in Saudi Arabia. The FBI declined to comment on those. Authorities are also tracking tips that the shooter made a trip to New York with three other students in the days before the attack. Based on an interview with one person who said there was no indication that the travel was linked to anything nefarious. The trip lasted about 4 days. Quote, they did touristy things. After the group returned to Florida, the shooter and others at a dinner gathering watched videos related to mass shootings in the United States. The FBI declined to comment about that. The Associated Press reported one of the three students who attended the dinner later recorded video outside the building while the shooting was taking place. Two other Saudi students watched from a car. Citing a U.S. official who spoke on a condition of anonymity after being briefed by federal authorities. The New York Times, citing a person briefed on the investigation, said the student who recorded the video later told investigators he just happened to be in the area when the shooting broke out. The FBI said in a statement that it had obtained video taken by a bystander from outside the building after the attack had begun and after first responders had arrived. The pistol used in the shooting was purchased legally and lawfully, according to the FBI. According to the governor of Florida, that's a federal loophole that he took advantage of, said Governor Ron DeSantis, adding that he would urge President Trump and other federal decision makers to change policies that allow foreign nationals to arm themselves. It is unclear exactly what criteria allowed the Pensacola gunman to purchase a firearm, but he was a member of the Royal Saudi Air Force who was credentialed through the U.S. through an aviation training program. Acting Secretary of Defense Mark Esper said he had ordered a review of the Defense Department's security and vetting policies. Guns are not allowed on the base, said Navy Rear Admiral Gary Mays, without prior approval. Why was the gunman even training inside the United States? Well, currently he is one of 852 Saudi nationals in the United States training under a cooperation agreement. Total, there are 5,200 foreign students from 153 countries in the United States currently doing military training. Training international students at NAS Pensacola is a core part of the base's mission. The shooter began a three-year course in August of 2017 with English, basic aviation, and initial pilot training, said one official. Foreign military trainees are vetted before traveling to the United States. U.S. Embassy personnel research databases for activities such as support for terrorism, drug trafficking, corruption, and other criminal behaviors. Travel orders are denied those who fail the screening. And finally, who was killed? Airman Muhammad Hatim, 19, of St. Petersburg, Florida. Ensign Joshua Caleb Watson, 23, of Coffee, Alabama. And Airman Apprentice Cameron Scott Walters, 21, of Richmond Hill, Georgia. According to Joshua Caleb Watson's family, he's a graduate of the United States Naval Academy. He saved countless lives. Heavily wounded, he made his way out to flag down the first responders and gave an accurate description of the shooter. He died serving his country. The other one is a young guy just right out of recruit training. He had just passed his test to stand post, and in a nightly video with his father the night prior to, talked about how excited he was and how much he was looking forward to doing that. So there's an update. The United States Marine Corps ban makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Dedicated to three sailors who lost their lives on Friday, who showed up for work to serve their country, were living their dreams, had their entire future ahead of them, and now their family will hold funerals. And so this dedicated to Airman Muhammad Hatim, 19, of St. Petersburg, Ensign Joshua Caleb Watson, 23, a graduate of the United States Naval Academy from Coffee, Alabama, and Airman Apprentice Cameron Scott Walters of Richmond Hill, Georgia. God bless you. May he hold your families in his hand and keep his hand close to his heart.
Our flag of God. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that little paying outfit 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infant soldier, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Brain Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time for us to check the weather. Here on a Monday, and let me update him. Then we'll take a quick break. We'll get Jeff Kenny on, and we'll talk about training foreign officers, which, you know, he and I both did at the Infantry Officer Course, and I don't know if Jeff had. More involvement with foreign officers, and let me tell you, I mean, it's different. It's different. There's a story going around that this officer was insulted when one of the instructors said he had a porn stash, right? So you'll hear guys say that, right? And, you know, nobody's attempting to do anything but flip somebody a little bit of shit, right? Which is normally within the bounds. But you get officers that come from other countries and, you know, depending on what royal family they came from or whatever, you know, nobody says shit like that to them. And so they're put off by it. And, you know, we went through it. I mean, they don't want to do shit, right? We don't do this. Other people dig these holes. We don't do this, right? We don't want to do this training. And so, anyway, we'll talk to Jeff about some of that stuff. Currently in Quantico, it's raining in 45. Camp Lejeune is cloudy in 57. 29 Palms warmed up a little bit. Sunny in 52. Pendleton, sun in 51. Camp Smith in Hawaii, clear dark in 70. Okinawa, cloudy dark in 65. They've cooled off. In Lashkargah in Afghanistan, it is cloudy evening and 58 degrees. And in Iraq, it is cloudy, dark, and 57. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is partly cloudy and 54, looking for a high of 66 today with sunny skies, and partly cloudy and 67 tomorrow. We'll take a quick break. More of, and then in hour two, you're going to hear an interview that I did with Emma. Emma is a former Marine officer, married to Marine, and crossed paths with post-traumatic winning here a couple times. And you're going to hear her story. Growing up in a family that had a lot of problems. And as oldest do, they're required to shoulder a heavier burden to be part parent in a family like that to younger siblings. And the story involves her being, you know, as she got older, in a confrontation with, you know, her mom's boyfriend, got beaten herself, and then her mom ultimately commits suicide. So you're going to hear... You're going to hear that interview after we talk to Jeff Kenney here on a Monday. We'll talk to Chris Woodbridge tomorrow. He's the editor and publisher of the Gazette, about what's in the Gazette this month. And then Mike Etor is going to join us on Wednesday, and we're going to talk about his book, and we're going to talk about a section of his book. So we'll figure that out probably today, but it should be an interesting week here on All Marine Radio. So don't touch that dial. Jeff Kenney going to join us next here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara.
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, Jeff Kenny joins me this morning. Jeff, how are you?
Good, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Looking good in your car there, by the way.
Thank you.
Everybody, you know, my friends that do Skype with me, they forget, and then sometimes they fire the picture up there, and they don't know they're on. And for whatever reason, the phone's always low, so I always wind up staring up their nose. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. You are no stranger to to training foreign officers. I don't know if your first experience was with in Quantico, but that's what mine was at the basic school in IOC. You know, foreign officers that come train with us, and so I wanted to have you on to get your thoughts on, you know, what happens in the aftermath of all of this. Give everybody a little bit of your background relative to training foreign military officers.
Yeah, my experience is the same as yours, Mac, and that the first time I really worked with them was when they came to IOC. And we had officers from Central America, different countries there, but we also had a high contingent of Arab officers that came from either Saudi Arabia or sometimes Egypt and places like that. And I remember one class in particular, because we had two groups, both from Saudi Arabia, totaling about six officers. And these guys had three of them were like non-secular officers, in that they didn't wear the long beards, and they pretty much had Western grooming. And then the other three, we called them the wise men, because they looked like the wise men on the Christmas bulbs, you know, with the long beards and stuff. And I have to tell you, the wise men were better infantrymen than the other three in this case. The other three, they did a lot of libo. They missed class sometimes because just didn't show up. And they were used to a lot more like a servile attitude from the enlisted folks, I guess, in Saudi Arabia to them than we had in the we had the United States Marine Corps in Quantico in 1993. And so I remember one particular incident. The platoon sergeant I was in charge of the field exercise, what we called VEX 2.5. And for those of you who are listening, what that was a live fire field exercise that was sandwiched during what we call the IOC war between the VEX 2 and VEX 3. And it took place a couple of different live fire movement ranges in the training area in Quantico. And this exercise had very little tactical aspects to it other than, you know, the live fire movement. Because of the safety and the fact they're doing live fire, we had to make sure they received the requisite amount of sleep and so forth. There was another increment of IOC, though, that stressed the human factors. And one of these exercises was what we call the chaos effects, where the lieutenants would be in the defense and they'd be hit by a dizzying combination of artillery simulators and tear gas, and then embedded within the lieutenant platoon and sworn to secrecy were casualties that would be suffered in field exercises and training, not necessarily in combat. So that when these guys revealed themselves as like having a closed head injury or a broken leg or a collapsed lung or something, they're realistic and not caused by simulated combat. And the idea was to actually stress the lieutenants. And the platoon sergeant for this particular exercise was a big kid named McDonough, who was an outstanding lieutenant and turned out to be an outstanding officer. I think he just retired as a colonel. And this kid was the platoon sergeant, and his roommate was one of these wise men in the basic school. And when Mac started manifesting the symptoms of this fake exercise, the guy was terribly upset. I mean, he was almost in tears. More than, you know, most lieutenants would put that aside and deal with the casualty. And he was doing that, but he was genuinely concerned about it, the guy who'd been a roommate with. And at that point, it was like almost 9 months. And that struck me. The other three, you know, by comparison, not so much. They kind of remind me of this guy who pulled the gun out on these folks in Pensacola. And so that's pretty much that's the first thing that came to my mind. And I read one of Timmy's texts where he was talking about earlier he had had a similar experience with some of them. I want to paint all of them with the same brush, but I'm just saying their their environment that they came from was very structured, and they were treated with a lot more, I'd say, almost like class favoritism than certainly anybody in any U.S. military. I mean, generals don't get treated with that level of, obsequiousness. So that's what leaped out at me when this thing came up.
Well, and there's an article that I want to say ran in the New York Times that says one of the instructors, he was very insulted and filed a grievance that this instructor said that he had, like, a porn stash.
Yeah, he nicknamed porn stash after, I guess, some porno actor has a mustache.
Yeah, because he had a bad, mustache or whatever. And to me, it highlights, right, what Jeff, and I kind of said what you just said a few minutes ago in that, you get these guys, and depending on what their background is from around the world, first of all, the kids that come from South Korea are as hard as woodpecker lips. They are the best lieutenants. They're going to come train with the Marine Corps or the Army, and they compete for those slots, and they come. The kids that come from Latin America, man, those guys are ballers, too. I mean, I remember teaching guys who taught about one guy fought in a dam for, like, 2 days, and they talked about how they had to clear the dam because these rebels had tried to take over, and they took over about half the dam, and they're in doing urban combat in this dam, and they're just sitting there telling you this crazy story about what they had to do, and all the craziness. And so, but the ones that come from the Middle East are privileged, many of them are privileged young men. And when you tell them to, dig a fighting hole or we're going to the field or blah, 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 they look at you like, I don't do that. And I know it got to be tough. And, sometimes, we would fight with, hey, this guy doesn't belong here. He doesn't want to be here. He doesn't want to go to the field, and they have either quote unquote religious days on a fairly regular basis to get out of shit. And so, so what do you do about this stuff? Training foreign militaries is a huge part of what we do around the world. It's part of our cooperation agreements. Do you have to now have a special investigative arm? You have to create, artificial intelligence to track these guys, to track their social media and whatnot. Do you have any – what do you do, Jeff?
Yeah, I would say, it's a delicate thing, isn't it? I mean, because of those deserving folks from those, that you mentioned, especially the El Salvador guys that we used to get, and and the Koreans. I mean, you're spot on. We had ties too. I mean, very much, they're there. They really tried to get there, and then they would not stand the humiliation of going back as a flunky. Whereas, we had these other folks from, from mostly Muslim countries who had the opposite. They're acting like we should be the ones that should be grateful for them being there.
Right. And just let me make a point. The ones that came from Korea, Thailand, Latin America, where I recall having the most contact with them, they became celebrities in the company.
Yeah.
They were tough guys, and they embraced the training, and they tended to be fun. They wanted to learn about the United States. They were excited to be here, and they knew that this was a ticket to them going to big places. But they had worked their ass off to get there, and so it was fun because they, our second lieutenants embraced them, and they loved them and enjoyed serving with them. And then you had these other guys, and not all. And again, I'm like Jeff. I don't want to paint with a too broad of a brush. But it would happen where, they didn't do Windows, and then it became problematic.
And like in that same group, remember we used to get, we'd break the lieutenants up into groups and assign one group to each captain, including one to the director, and they're like, you are their mentor and they are your mentees. Right. I used to bring them to the house at least 3 times, and I live right there on base, 3 times during the PTP of during the training syllabus at IOC, and just talk to them about stuff and explain to them, you know, what the Marine Corps is like and everything, why we're doing this, and, you know, kind of like the background behind things. And we'd drink beer, and I wasn't like buddy-buddy with them, but I was their mentor. I mean, that was the whole idea. And to get it to where they understood why they were being put through this, you know, odyssey of pain and suffering called IOC. And I think it was a good thing. But I remember I had one of these guys, one of the non-wise men, he refused to come. And
yeah, so just so everybody knows, refused.
Yeah.
Refused. Like it was his decision whether he would, you know, participate in this. And so, I mean, so those are small indicators that something else is wrong someplace.
Yeah. Yeah, they're, they are aggrieved always. There's a certain personality of a person who's always aggrieved. And I don't think it's a Muslim, but it is more prevalent, it seems, at least in the military that I was in contact with. And then I did a lot of time as an advisor, and I saw it again and again.
Right.
The sense of entitlement. And always being aggrieved. I mean, I remember in the words of the great American philosopher Bill O'Reilly, which I think he got from somebody else, to take offense when none is intended is a form of selfishness. And that was constant. And, you know, in IOC, one of the ways we bonded with these guys is to make dumb nicknames about, like, every guy that ever named was never named Richards. One of the IOC instructors with us would call the guy Dick. So his name is Dick Richards. And I, years later, had a Marine working for me, who's now a major. He's OPSO of LE Battalion. Working for me as an advisor, his name is Scott, and I named him Dick Richards, you know, and he says, thanks, sir. Now everybody in the Marine Corps calls me Dick. So, but it wasn't because I just like making fun of people. It was a way we kind of like, you know, bonded with these guys. We had a lieutenant named Blaya, and the other lieutenants called him Princess Blaya. After, you know what I mean? It's just the type of shit that happens when guys are, what it really is a way of saying who you were before you got here doesn't matter. Who you are now and our cohesion with each other, that matters. And it's kind of a way of, almost like a subconscious way of doing that, but it certainly doesn't mean we look down on you, you know?
No. No, and they would, and the nicknames would be funny, right? Because they would tend to develop them while they were in their company at the base school.
Yeah.
And you'd say, hey, where's Lieutenant, you know, Ali Salam? But, like, you mean Billy Bob?
Like, yeah, right.
Who? Yeah, hey, so that's, his name's Billy Bob. His name's Billy Bob, right? Yeah. And then you'd say another one, and like, yeah, that's Elmer. Like, what the fuck did you guys do to these guys? And they're like, no, that's their name. They're Elmer now. And so, but again, as Jeff said, it's not an insult. Everybody, you know, tends to get, you know, and that's one of the fortunate things about being named McNamara, right?
Yeah.
Yours was pre-made, right, Mac? And so which kept you from getting some other one that tied to your looks or some other part of your being. So is it greater scrutiny with these guys, particularly if you are from the Middle East? Because what this sounds like, right? And the Saudis are, you know, are all over social media talking about our deep ties to the United States and we're your greatest ally in the Middle East and blah blah blah. But you know, this hits awful close to September 11th, right?
Absolutely. I think the answer is a prep school or some kind of prep. I mean, if this is that important to us, then maybe, you know, the whole mentor thing, maybe this guy needs to be assigned somebody who's before he even comes. I mean, if it's that important, then we want to be more circumspect about who we're bringing over here. Because if it's such an important thing, like, they're going to probably blame this instructor who called this guy Porn Stash.
That's bullshit, right?
Yeah. Because what it says is it's your fault that this guy committed murder on three innocent people, you know, because of one, it shouldn't matter what you said to him, or none of that stuff matters. Being the recipient of an insult should never justify a crime.
But, you know, just so everybody knows, right, when you go into the aviation community, you get a call sign.
Yep.
And that's part of it. And you don't choose it. One of our air officers in Afghanistan, his nickname, his call sign is Metro. And it's like, how did you get that? And he's like, it's not very. It has to do with an incident in Thailand on their metro system late at night. And so I initially had another name, then I became Metro, and that's who I am today. I am Metro. Rudy, a friend, F-18 man, he got Rudy because he tried to get into flight school 7 different times. Right? So they tagged him with Rudy. But, I mean, it is a long-standing tradition. You lose your own personal name, and you become a call sign in the aviation community. And again, you don't choose it. They do. Okay? And so when you see somebody saying something like that, you know, oh, well, you know, he was being abused and hazed, and give me a break. You don't understand the culture, right? And you know what, Jeff, that's pretty – I don't know if you're spot on in that. That these guys need to be not only vetted but observed.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And if somebody decides I'm not coming to your house,
right,
then just like the personnel reliability program back in the day, and I don't know if it still operates, and I don't know if it's still the same, but you know, when you guarded nuclear weapons, you were part of the personnel reliability program, and I didn't need shit to tell you that you were leaving.
Right.
All I had to do is say I've lost, based on you know multiple events and some innuendo, I've lost confidence in this Marine's ability to do the job, and they were gone. They left the next day, and so to me, you know, and again, does it need to be with everybody? The South Koreans have not shown any indication why we would do this with them, but
yeah.
the Saudis have.
That's one of the big dangers of professional military forces, that it'll get used to do other things, to like send other messages. You know, like the whole thing we did in with the Marine Corps with the Crucible. You know, it was a good idea. You know, you think all the Marines go through this thing near the end of boot camp, and at the end, it's very hard, and at the end of it, they all come out with a new sense of, you know, of cohesion with each other. And when I went through boot camp, I thought, who the fuck needs that? The whole thing was hard to me from the first day to the end. You know, it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. And but then I found out from the Crucible, when I went down there, when I first took over recruiting station in Pittsburgh. I went down there to Paris Island. We had a conference, and we watched this thing. I'm like, well, how do you flunk? You can't flunk. I go, then it sucks. If you go through something that's supposed to be the Crucible, the whole idea is not everybody can make it. You know, don't call it that then. Call it something else. Like they had the whole Outward Bound thing where you fall backwards and you fall into the arms of the rest of the little team and stuff, you know. And what it does is, my kid went through boot camp like 4 years later, my second kid, down in Paris Island, and I'm watching him. He's getting his Eagle Globe and Anchor pinned on, and I said to him, hey, the Joel Center, was he talking to you or the guy next to me? Not next to you. He goes, yeah, Dad, he was talking to the guy next to me. He said, it was up to him, this motherfucker would never be wearing a Marine Corps Eagle Globe and Anchor. Joel Center was saying to the kid. So I'm thinking, well, thank God for that anyway. And I mean, you know, that because – you really, for something to be worthwhile, it has to have meaning. For there to be a good, there has to be a bad. For there to be a stink, there has to be a good. You know what I'm saying? Some things are only defined in relation to their opposites. And you must make something to where you can actually not get through, otherwise it could lose its value. And when you pass students, when you put students through, you know, knowing that they're going to make it because you just tell the guys who run the course, this guy makes it no matter what. What about Joe Blow from Dubuque? Well, fuck him. He don't make it. We have our standards here. So, but it weakens the whole thing in the eyes of the students. And the eyes of the students are the ones that matter. And if they don't have confidence in the integrity of the thing they've gone through, then they're not going to be as good officers at whatever job it is when they get out there and actually start doing it.
I thought you could be dropped from. You know, it's interesting when you read about General Krulak and the Crucible.
Yeah.
Not to derail the conversation, but. He said, you know, look, we think that Marines are coming from a culture that has certain values. Well, more and more, our values are different. And so this whole shared experience thing that we think they come from, that they understand, you know, they really don't. So we need to create an event that creates these things, which is kind of interesting because I think General Kulak's observation in the 90s, are certainly continue to be spot on, and that gulf between culture and the core values of the Marine Corps only has gotten wider. And so to me, it's I always say that, you know, I think the DNA of the young people today that grow up in the society that they do, given the way they're parented, given the way their schools are preparing them, their DNA is more unique. Because, I mean, that's to leap into the Marine Corps from that culture, that's jumping across the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea is good, but the truth of it is...
No, you can I, and one more point. You made the point, right, that if you can't fail... Right, it doesn't. You know, what good does it do? It's a participation event, and you can't. You cannot give somebody self esteem. You could give a little kid 8 million, right, participation medals for everything from picking their nose to wiping their ass, and they don't give a shit because they didn't. They didn't earn it. The only thing that generates esteem is that which you sacrifice and earn in your life.
Right. Exactly. It gets to the whole philosophy that I think is the underpinning of post-traumatic winning. If you can give your suffering some meaning, then it will turn from being a detriment to you to an asset. And that relates to so many different aspects of just your life that it's profound. And that's one of what we're talking about now, in a way, is one of them. If somebody is so... You know, it's so, I can't even know the word adjective. It's so, self-centered, I think,
I think the term you're looking for is fucked in the head.
Yeah. You're getting a chance to go through an off the charts quality instruction on how to fly. Jet airplanes are almost like spaceships in their complexity. And you are going to piss it all away because of some, you know, ridiculous peak because of some, you know, overly sensitive, you know, resentment. You know, that is a philosophy that needs to be stamped out or at least discouraged highly.
Yeah, I don't. So is the solution that we vet them before they come here to include, you know, that whole mentor thing? And then we keep track of them. Timmy's wrote a piece about concealed carry on base. You have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's ironic that the one place that has people who are the best trained to handle firearms, the most place it's illegal for them to carry one, besides doing training, in the base they live. So I absolutely think that either concealed or that should be a liberal thing in the military on base that, you know, should be more easily granted than someone out in the civilian world, even though I think you should be able to carry a gun. You know, so I'm kind of different that way. But if you carry it openly or concealed, in today's society, this is seen as a gap, as a weakness by people who want to hurt America. And I don't mean hurt America's economy or hurt America's military. They want to hurt us to our soul. They want people to feel bad in America. So committing murder on some of the seed corn of the nation, kids who are learning how to do their job to defend the nation at the very beginning of their career, to see that as a vehicle to cause national ill will, needs to be discouraged. And the best way to discourage it is make it a hard spot, not a weakness, not a gap. Make this place, there's got a Marine base, has got Marines walking around with guns. And if you click off safe, they're going to click you on safe permanent pretty quick. You know, and then, of course, you know, you have to, you know, the it can't be just like, I mean, everybody in the military, by virtue of being on active duty military, should be eligible for this. How can we have people who aren't, who are still, you know, walking around serving the nation? If you can't be trusted for that. So, yeah, I agree with Timmy for sure.
That thing will be dead on arrival at Congress, right? If you ran that in front of Congress, they would be like, no, don't even bring that crazy shit to us, right?
Yeah.
That you should be able to, There should be a different set of rules in terms of concealed carry on federal installations. If you're part of active duty military, it is assumed that you can carry a weapon, you know, that kind of what people would say liberal, very liberal and very gun-friendly kind of a policy would never even be considered by Congress. But it's okay. But it's okay. I mean, think about this. We had recruiters, right?
Yeah. In Nashville, right?
We had recruiters chased by gunmen, and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't have concealed carry. Now, let me just tell you this. Truth be told, a lot of Marines carry. They don't say shit, but they carry. And so whether it's on their leg, whether it's on their waist, you know, a lot of them don't say anything. And so Marines will solve this. And if you don't think recruiters, you know, changed the way that they did business as a result of that, you don't know Marines then. Because let me tell you what Marines will say. Look, somebody else can figure the fuck out. I know what I'm doing.
Yep.
Well, you want to tell me about it? Not really. Nobody's business but mine. And then word gets around that that's what they do. And so it goes. So,
and that's, you never know when you run into one of these guys who's carrying. Exactly. What we talk about, like the idea of these guys have to spend time with someone who's really looking at them, even if it's not ostensible, you know, but somebody who's really looking at them, maybe in their home country. Maybe that's part of the program for bringing people over here. And another big, huge problem we had, I was talking to my son, matter of fact, the same son who was in that crucible. I was talking to him, we were talking about this incident, and you know, kind of reminded me, all these, we had all these Afghan pilots, you know, helicopter guys, going UA like to beat the band.
Right.
And, you know, they're somewhere in America now. You know, and so it's like,
But I'll tell you what, I don't blame them, right? If I came from Afghanistan, I'd go UA too. Fuck that.
Yeah. But is it, exactly. But you know, so you wonder, you know, some vetting, you know, is necessary. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine? You come from where, pick a place, Lashkar Gah, you know, Lashkar Gah's developed, okay?
And here's the thing, we know how Lashkar Gah is, for those listening, it's the capital of Helmand Province. But we had people who, when I was there last time, who would report in to be the Afghan version of a JTAC, and they go UA in Lashkar Gah. That was like a limo place. When you're a guy like that, you get to America, you're like, fuck Lashkar Gah, I'm going to LA.
I didn't even know. And then they're standing here. So I don't blame those son of a bitches for going UA. But to me, there's an assimilation piece, right, that starts with, and I'd be curious to see if this guy was standoffish and blah, 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 blah. So if you won't assimilate, if you don't embrace it culturally, to me, that's a red flag. Just stay, go have somebody else train you. Go have the French train you. Yeah. Right. We don't need you here in this country. So where do you think this goes, Jeff?
The news cycle being what it is, something else will probably happen and knock it off.
Okay, where do you think this goes in terms of policy? Do you think the DOD will change any policy?
No, I don't think so. I think they may do like lipstick on a pig a little bit, you know, but I don't think so. This ain't enough dead people. And, you know, they'll say, well, you know, we just had a guy in Pearl Harbor who wasn't a Saudi guy who shot a couple people, so throw them aside. Right. You know, it's like they'll wait for this. I like to say, you know, they wait for the hysteria swelling to go down in the wound, and then they'll start with the same old shit. Right.
No, I think you're right. That's the way, and that's the blueprint, right? You lay low, you let this steam, as you said, then we'll be on to impeachment, and some other fucked up thing will happen. Christmas, New Year's, nobody will be paying attention. It's kind of like the base housing thing. Mold! Yeah. Shit! We got to take care of the troops, right? Mm-hmm. 10 months later, they held a fucking carbon copy of the same hearing.
Yeah.
And now you have more families suing for permanent physical respiratory damage done by this shit. Well, where the fuck are the people that are supposed to take care of this shit? And so I agree with you. I will tell you what I think will be in effect, though. I think more people will conceal carry and they won't talk about it.
Yeah.
Or they won't even conceal. I mean, concealed carry means that you went through the process. More people will just have guns on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll hide them in their vehicle and all the rest of that shit and whatnot. And so, saying, hey, I am not going to do this.
Yeah. They're going to blame those instructors are going to get, they're going to put a lot of pressure on them. And that's a shame too, because that instructor with the porn stash thing, that's going to be, I remember when this whole insider threat thing started what happened was the Taliban used because there's normally friction between young dudes with guns from different countries, no matter where they are. So you had a couple of Iraqis shooting Americans, Americans shooting Iraqis in Iraq. In Afghanistan, you had more because the national character and ethnic divisions there, they shoot each other like it's cool, and eventually it starts spilling over and they shoot Americans. And this, I'm talking about in the, 11, 12 time frame.
Right.
And,
no, I mean, I can tell you that they roll into your chow hall with their Kalashnikovs, yeah. Right? And you're trying to eat lunch, and you see a bunch of people get up and walk the fuck out.
Yeah.
I what am I going to do? Try to eat lunch and wait to hear, a bolt going home? Fuck that.
Yeah, so the Taliban was shrewd enough. They got like maybe a dozen of their guys. Either they got a guy that they influenced by holding his family hostage, or just, they had a guy who's already pissed off about something and encouraged them, or they put a no kidding terrorist in the army. And these guys, they bumped the numbers up enough so that, of course, our bureaucracy panicked and it was exactly what they wanted. They wanted to drive a wedge between Americans who were partnering with the Afghans and the Afghans. And what the Americans do when we did our training, so to speak, the whole thing was you can stop this by not being rude, by not, by being overly, right. Solicitous of them and stuff, which is the wrong thing
right.
for people. Well, that was not why things happened. People did not cause their own death. And here's the thing, like in this instance, if we were to blame this thing on the porn stash, instructor, then, the truth is this, they rarely take it out on the guy who does it. They take it out on somebody that they don't even know. So it's just stupid.
Yeah, no. But again, that narrative will get quashed too. It's like, oh, now this is the absurdity of it. Oh, you're going to scapegoat the guy who shot him?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Yeah. Well, fuck, hello. Yeah. I mean, he's the one that ultimately fucking did it. Like, oh, you mean he's now a victim too? Well, bullying is so terrible. So bullying's now an excuse to go kill innocent people, not the person that bullied you.
Yeah, it's like people have livelihoods that are attached to inappropriate reactions to crises.
Right.
And like I'm watching TV, and there's this panel, of course, on a little while ago, some thieves, armed robbers, took control of a UPS van. They're driving it down the road, and they're shooting at cops who are chasing them. And, of course, there's a traffic jam, and the cops are out, and they're using the cars that are stopped in the traffic jam as cover while these guys are putting out serious rounds at them. The cops put, 50 rounds or something into this van and kill everybody in there. Two hostages, the UPS driver, and two of these bad guys. And there's one of these people on there saying, how are these police trained to do this? They're using vehicles with innocent people on as cover. Even if you were stupid enough to not use cover, you couldn't not use it because there's this traumatic, horrific event that's being caused by these bad people. And, to blame the guys who are trying to put an end to it, it's just, I'm thinking to myself, she can't really believe this. Like, if you just let them keep, so the cops are there, should the cops leave and let the, because then the guys are just, they shoot at anybody they perceive as a threat. These guys were shooters. I mean, the only way you can stop somebody who's shooting is to shoot them back. And unfortunately, the rounds go two ways. So, but I just think, there was a reluctance on that panel's part to put the blame, like you said, on the guys who did the robbery, who were shooting out the windows in this van, And there's a reluctance as if somehow they are part of the whole inappropriate police response,
Yeah, and let me just tell you, the whole bullying thing, to me, you know, I got asked in a question and answer thing, you know, somebody brought up bullying. Another part of, you know, people, you know, struggling in life is, you know, the fact that they've been bullied. Do you have, like, a solution to that? And I said, yeah, go fight the bully.
Yeah, stand up for it. Even if you get your ass whipped, right, you'll feel better about it.
And normally, they stop. They bully weak people. And I said, I know it's not going to be popular, but you want to stop somebody from bullying you, fight them. And even if you get beat up, they're not going to do it anymore. It's not the way bullies operate. And I said, but now you can't even get in a fight in high school. And I said, look, 98% of Marines going to recruit training have never been in a fight. Ever been in a fight in their life. Right? And so, I mean, do you teach people how to stand up for themselves? You know, and that's okay to do, is to stand up for yourself. And if somebody's trying to impose himself on you, that you have the absolute right to defend yourself, right? And to push back. They don't have any call to do that to you, and it's okay. But no, you'll get kicked out of high school and all the rest of that bullshit. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you know, we have, again, so that's an excuse to murder people. No, fuck no. A million times fuck no, it's not. And so let me read you an email and then I'll let you go. Mac, I believe that this should be aimed at the Saudis. Where there's smoke, there's fire. This tends not to happen from any of the rest of our foreign partners. So we're gonna apply it to the great officers that come out of South Korea, that come out of Thailand, that come out of Latin America that we've all served with. Fuck that. Apply it to the Saudis because they deserve it.
Yep.
And then here's another one. Look, I think we all know they'll pull the string on this dude, and he's going to be a Wahhabist. Yes? Whoa, what a fucking shocker. How about we look at that shit, boys and girls, that if you're from that sect or you have any inclination towards that, you don't fucking come.
Yeah. You know, that guy's right. Both of them are right. And I'll tell you something else, though. Here's the thing when you pull that string about Wahhabists. Hey, this guy's a Wahhabist. Hey, guess what? Every other fucking Saudi who comes is a Wahhabist, too. That's their religion. Wahhabi's not extreme in Saudi Arabia. Sharia law is the law of the land there.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, and one of the things you saw, supposedly, in one of his tweets was, Americans have come to Saudi Arabia and stayed there. Who is that echoing?
Osama bin Laden.
There you go.
I think 90% of them get over here and they're like, oh my God, this is great. Porn, strip clubs, booze. We love it. And they become like, Princess Di's fiance she got killed with in that car wreck. But then about 10%, maybe less. I don't know the percentage. Matter of fact.
Bullshit. I bet you when they pulled a string on where these guys went when they were in New York City, they were in strip clubs. I mean, the sanctimonious fucks that did 9/11, where were they the weekend before? They were in fucking Vegas.
Are you saying that this murderer is a hypocrite?
Oh, God forbid, no.
Good God, the horror. He's been victimized so many times by having to come here and learn how to fly a piece of billion-dollar equipment. And then, on top of that, getting a stipend and being able to hang out and go around and do whatever he wants. And then, because of all that, adversity was put on him, he finally clicked off safe. It's such a fucking fuck story, man. Such baloney.
All right. Well, first of all, I appreciate you hopping on this morning. Have a good one.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much.
That is Colonel Jeff Kenney, United States Marine Corps retired, here on a Monday edition. Now, I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. And I don't think it ought to be applied to everybody. I think it ought to be applied to the Saudis, if that's where the problem is. And again, if you were to see some of the shit that, and it's primarily Saudi officers, you know, that do it, you know, they come and they don't do windows. And so, you know, they go up to the embassy. That's a big thing. Oh, he had to go to the embassy. That's why he can't go to the field. Right? Send him the fuck back. But just right, you got to have some kind of, some organization that they're a part of for 90 days where they have mentors. And if they show the ability not to assimilate socially, then send them back home. right? They don't like the culture. They don't like what they're doing here. Then that's fine. And again, the whole porn stash thing, right, is indicative of that disconnect. That world, you get a call sign, right? That's you, and that's, you know, Maverick, right? Metro, Rudy, right? Porn stash. I mean, you hear all these ones, you know, all these different nicknames. That's a huge part of your identity as an aviator, right? And so he thought he was insulted. You know, trust me, most of those call signs are insulting or something funny or humorous that person gets tagged for. So and you'll hear people use that as a pretense to defend. But I think the bottom line is nobody expects the DOD to do anything, right? Now, but again, here's to me the question, right? I don't know the details, but the things that we've heard is somebody videotaped it. Is that true? And two others sat in a car and watched it. Now, what are the circumstances surround that? And to me, the FBI ought to get that information out earlier. Hey, he got out of a car that three other Saudi officers were in and said, I'll be right back. Two of them stayed in the car. The other heard shooting and got out and started videotaping. That's the truth of this story. And we want to get that out there because other than that, to me, what it looks like when you hear somebody who videotaped it is that they had watched these mass shooting videos. He had planned it. And that guy's an accomplice. Why is he not under arrest? Why are the others that knew about it and didn't report it, why are they not under arrest? So to me, that ought to get out to the public relatively quickly. Relatively quickly. Anyway, all right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear from Emma. Emma's story is a post-traumatic winning story. It's a story about somebody who grew up tough in a family that had a lot of turbulence in it, the oldest child, and she had to... she had to be part parent at a young age. And ultimately that involves domestic violence against her. She gets beaten. And then ultimately involves suicide. And so, and then how she crossed paths with post-traumatic winning and how it changed her. So anyway, and you know what? I'll tell you what. Jeff Kenney's one of the smartest guys I know. Right? He's one of the most plain-spoken, smart guys that I know in my life. And to hear when he says stuff like, that's the brilliance of post-traumatic winning. And when you think of post-traumatic winning, here's what I want you to think of. I want you to think of a hole that becomes a trampoline. Okay, this hole in your life, this traumatic thing that everybody looks at as a hole. What happens if we can turn it into a trampoline that vaults you to a higher plane in your life, okay? Or if you want to talk about liabilities, how about if we can turn that liability into an asset? And that's what Frankl talks about, right? The trampoline's kind of a visual image for it. But we're going to take that liability that you have in your life and we're going to turn that into an asset, right? And that by giving it meaning, right, by giving your suffering meaning, and that is, by changing other people's lives, you're going to overwhelm that traumatic experience with joyful experiences. And that's what every one of us can do. And that's the beauty of post-traumatic winning. So anyway, our truth, right? Viktor Frankl. So yeah, it's cool stuff. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, you're going to meet Emma here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors,
teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.